Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into this edition of the Hoop Crew Hour. Again, my name is Chris Traficante. Glad to be broadcasting the show to you from the Hoop Crew Central Offices. Hope everybody is enjoying this big draft week that we have, all these rumors popping up everywhere around the league, not only pertaining to the Celtics, but, you know, pertaining to other teams and what they're planning on doing. It's really going to be a crazy 24 to 48 hours leading up through the NBA draft tomorrow night. Of course, we will get into that. We'll talk about some of the big rumors floating around the league. And, of course, we'll talk about the what seems like 100 possibilities for the Boston Celtics going into tomorrow night, what they may be looking to do, what their hope is, and what may be drying up for the Celtics come tomorrow night. But before we get going, let's you know, we've got a jam-packed show today, a lot to get to. Check us out at hcrundown.com, hoopcrewrundown.com. We have everything you need covered, Celtics, college, high school, rankings. We have everything you need, blogs, rumors, standings, leading scorers for leagues, and we got everything you need. So check us out at hcrundown.com. I promise it won't disappoint. You know, you can find all these podcasts up on our website as well. So give us a look. Again, that's hcrundown.com. Before we get going into all this draft stuff, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't talk about Cavaliers. You know, what a game seven that was to watch. First of all, just as a fan, you know, that was an awesome game to watch. It was back and forth. It kind of had a hard-nosed game kind of feel to it. It wasn't all these people just running around, firing up shots, knocking down shots with no defense. Guys are really getting into people, really defending at a high level. It was an interesting game to watch from the back and forth perspective, you know. I'm sure a lot of people, you know, especially around these parts, you know, a lot of people aren't big LeBron James fans. You know, I'm not one of them. I don't really have a problem with LeBron. You know, they were probably waiting for his moment where he, you know, he pissed himself, you know, and everybody kind of has that, you know, that same feeling that when the moment gets big, LeBron kind of shrinks. The moment doesn't get bigger than winning three consecutive games against a team that won 73 games in the regular season. Two of those wins out of the three that you won consecutively were on the road against a team that lost one game at home this past season, or two games at home this past season. So I think that the talk about LeBron shrinking in the big moment needs to stop, you know, because, I mean, this is the greatest, single-handedly the greatest NBA Finals comeback in the history of the league, and it's not particularly close. Therefore, LeBron James to, you know, have two games consecutively where he scores 41 in game five and then 41 in game six and then follow it up. You know, how do you follow up consecutive 41-point games? You follow it up by winning an NBA championship for a city that hasn't won a professional sports championship in 56 years on the road by posting a triple-double and winning finals MVP. That would be how you follow it up. LeBron James was phenomenal. Phenomenal. You know, games one and two, I think we can all agree, and even himself said it after the game, he didn't play well in games one and two. He had to go back to the drawing board, figure out where things were going wrong, and he did. He did. From games three, four, five, six, and seven, he was a much different player, a much better player. Game four, he struggled a little bit, but three, five, six, and seven, LeBron James was the best player on the court. It wasn't even close. You know, and the people, you know, I'm all over social media. You know, I check Twitter for all the news and the rumors, and you know, I just like to be plugged in with different things like that, so I can bring it to you guys. The people after the game, after Game 7, after LeBron wins it for Cleveland, you know, there were a handful of people that were talking, you know, more than a handful of people talking about how great LeBron is, how this really cements his legacy. Winning one for Cleveland was the biggest hurdle LeBron had to overcome in his career. He's now overcome it. How great that was for him. It was a great story. It was a great story when he wrote that letter to go back to Cleveland. I remember that day. I was working that day, and I remember I had refreshed Twitter that day, and I had seen a little Sports Illustrated tweet that said, LeBron James is coming home. And I'm thinking to myself, what is this? You know, lo and behold, posted 3 seconds after I refreshed Twitter, so I was really in the know right there. I remember telling all my coworkers, like, holy crap, LeBron James is going back to Cleveland. It was a huge deal, a huge deal. And I remember everyone was really a fan of LeBron James for making that move. So just an awesome story for him winning a ring for the city of Cleveland. But the people after the game that baffled me how they were saying Kyrie Irving should have been the MVP of that series. Yes, look, I understand Kyrie had a terrific game 5, 6, and 7. He played very well. Just, you know, he played better than he's played his entire career. And these moments are what makes good players like Irving ascend to superstar level, and I'm sure Kyrie is ready to take that next step, as we just saw. But for people to say Irving should have been the MVP and Irving deserves all the credit because he hit the big shot, you guys are crazy. That's crazy. LeBron James dominated the series from the point where they were down 3-1. He was the best player on the floor. No competition. There wasn't even a second, third, or fourth place finisher. That's how good LeBron was. That's how good he was. The next best player in the series, it was LeBron, 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 and then maybe Kyrie Irving. That's how good he was, you know? And people will say, well, you know, he had a triple-double in Game 7, but he didn't score the ball that well. You know, enough. Enough of that. I'm so sick of hearing people say, yeah, LeBron got a triple-double, but he only had 22 points. Yeah, but he had 11 assists and 12 rebounds, you know? Like those stats don't mean anything. Like, they don't affect the game at all, you know? LeBron scores 22 points, has 11 assists. He's probably accounting for, you know, around 45 to 50 of the team's points. But nobody wants to factor that in because they just want to, you know, they just want to rag on LeBron, which is silly. Just silly. Just stop. Give the guy his credit. He's one of the best basketball players to ever play the game, you know. And people were saying, well, he's probably in the top 10, you know. This is assuming, you know, the series is 3-1, Golden State's up 3-1. And people are, you know, are assuming Cleveland's going to lose. So they instantly start going to the legacy talk. And, you know, where is LeBron going to rank if Cleveland loses the series? And people said, you know, oh, he's definitely a top 10 player. He's probably in the back end of the top 10, an 8 to 10 range for LeBron, which I thought was crazy to begin with. LeBron's a top 5 player, win or lose this series. But now he wins the series, and all of a sudden he's a top 5 player, better than Larry Bird, and he's coming from Michael Jordan. You know, I don't know really how you go from one extreme to the other like that, but this win does a lot for LeBron. And I think, number one, what it does, it makes him the best small forward of all time. And I know that, you know, guys my age, 21, 22, 23 years old, will say, you know, oh, LeBron's the best small forward of all time. So, you know, there's no question about it. But there is a question. Larry Bird is terrific. But Bird never did anything like what LeBron James just did. Not many people have ever done what LeBron James just did. You know what? I've been seeing this floating around as well. Michael Jordan and LeBron James, at the time they were both 31 years old, both had 3 championships. So there's a lot of basketball left for LeBron James to really cement his legacy. I said this, you know, after he went back-to-back in Miami. I do think LeBron's going to be considered the best player to ever play the game. At some point, he's going to be considered the best player to ever play the game. My guess would be LeBron ends up with 4, maybe 5 championships, and that'll close the gap on the argument. Well, Jordan has 6 and LeBron has 2. Well, now it's cut in half, you know. And obviously Jordan's not playing, so that number isn't rising. So it's just LeBron looking to, you know, win as many as he can, and I think Cleveland is built for success, especially if Irving plays that way. I think they can make some roster adjustments. So I think this is just the beginning of Cleveland. And LeBron obviously today announcing he'll come back to Cleveland. Well, I know a lot of people are all over the fact that maybe he could leave. Even Adrian Wojnarowski was on that. So LeBron will be in Cleveland next season. So they will look to repeat as NBA champions. And, you know, I do also think, you know, when we look at Game 7, you know, we look at Cleveland and we talk about that extreme, we need to look at Golden State as well. And I know everyone's saying, oh, what a choke job. But, you know, and people around here are comparing Golden State to the New England Patriots 16-0 season when they lost to the Giants in the Super Bowl. And everyone kind of is saying the same thing. It's an epic choke job by Golden State. So, first of all, we can't give any credit to LeBron and Cleveland and the Cleveland Cavaliers for winning the series. It's instantly a choke by Golden State. And number two, the difference between the greatest single season in NBA history and back-to-back champions is one player hitting one shot. You know, the difference between the single greatest season and the biggest choke of all time is one shot. You know, if Kyrie doesn't hit that shot, who knows? Maybe Golden State wins the game. You know, so I think that we need to settle in the middle somewhere that it was a terrific season, and they just came up short. You know, it's just like the Patriots argument. The difference between the best team in NFL history and going 19-0 and winning a Super Bowl is one man making the most ridiculous play in the history of the league, pinning the ball against his helmet in midair. So, you know, I think that we have to find a middle ground between, yes, they came up short. Yes, it was a disappointment. But that doesn't make it the biggest choke in sports. You know, there's a middle ground there. And I think that people need to understand that. Did Golden State kind of wet themselves a little bit? Yes, I don't think anybody played well in the last 5 minutes of the game, but that's what made it entertaining. It was kind of like, oh, man, every shot you're holding your breath, you don't know who's going to make the play first. And it just happened to be Kyrie Irving with 3 seconds on the shot clock fading away. You know, so it's hard for me to say it's an epic choke when more so it should just be noted that there's a middle ground. You know, there's a middle ground there. And Golden State came up short, and they'll be the first to admit it. But sometimes these losses are the best thing for a team. Golden State's not going anywhere. Steph Curry's not getting, you know, he's not aging, you know, drastically over the next 3 or 4 years. Klay Thompson is only getting better. Draymond Green is terrific. You know, maybe they make a run at a guy like Kevin Durant. I don't know. You know, they're going to make some moves to ensure that they're back on top. This feeling hurts, and it makes executives want to get back to that pedestal. And I wouldn't be surprised to see another rematch next year. I really wouldn't. 3 years in a row, the rubber match, I would not be surprised at all to see that next year. But that is a long way away, so we don't have to talk about that today. But I just wanted to kick off the show saying that, you know, what a job by LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Just an awesome, awesome series, an awesome game, and an awesome legacy-supplanting win for James. So really, really good and fun stuff to watch. Let's move over to the NBA draft here. Let's talk a little bit about the draft. We are just about a little over 36-38 hours away from the NBA draft. You know, a lot is going to be popping up in rumor mills, on social media. Team X is talking to Team Y about acquiring this pick for this player. You're going to hear a lot of that. You know, and that's what makes draft week fun. You know, you get a lot of those reports and a lot of those different things popping up. You know, and it gives fans a reason to be tuned in, you know, because you just don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if there's going to be a big trade. You don't know if your team is going to draft the guy that you want them to draft. And everybody has their own personal mock draft, who they like, who they want their team to take. You know, and us as Celtics fans are no different. You know, of course, we have a million different things that we want to play out. The truth be told, I'm not really sure anything's going to play out. So, you know, I'm not bating my breath for anything like that to happen. Do I have some situations for the Celtics that I would be disappointed if they didn't pan out? Yeah, absolutely I would. You know, like if they take Dragan Bender at number 3, I'm gonna throw my television out the window. You know, I don't want to see that. You know, that doesn't help them now, and I don't think it's going to help them in 4 or 5 years. You know, I just don't think he's going to be a good player. You know, but there are other guys out there, too, that, you know, I wouldn't be overly ecstatic about, but I could probably talk myself into guys like Jamal Murray, guys like Buddy Hield, Jaylen Brown. You know, I could probably talk myself into that, you know, and say, well, it does help them. It's not the move that we all wanted. It's not the move that we all thought, but it certainly does help the team. So, like I said, I could talk myself into that. Chris Dunn is the one name I would probably be pretty okay with, you know, for a few reasons. One, I think if they draft Dunn, I do think Chris Dunn is the third best player in this draft, so I do think that is, if they're drafting best player available, I think it should be done. Regardless of the fact that they have Thomas, they have Smart, they have Bradley, you know, that doesn't matter. The league is trending smaller. And you can always make a move, whether it be with Dunn, whether it be with Smart or Bradley, or even Thomas for that matter. You know, maybe you make a move later on in the summer with one of those guys and it opens up more minutes for Dunn, or maybe you move Dunn for someone that wants him for an established veteran. I don't know. You know, I don't know how that's all going to work out. And the second option is, because I think if they take Chris Dunn, you know what? Like, you know, if they take Buddy Hield, I think that's it. You know, I think that they're keeping Buddy Hield. So if they take Bender, if they take Murray, I think that that's their guy. You know, but if they take Dunn, there's still options out there because a lot of teams have Chris Dunn as number three on their board. So that could be a pick that's moving that night or moving in a week or moving in a month. So, you know, I think the trade possibilities stay open depending on who they pick. And Chris Dunn would certainly be one of those guys. So that would be the one guy I would be okay with the Celtics picking, is Chris Dunn. I think that would be good for them. I think it would be good for the franchise, whether they keep him or whether they trade him. Because I do think Chris Dunn could develop into an all-star player. People have said that he reminds them of Dwayne Wade. I wouldn't say he reminds me of Dwayne Wade, but he's got similar feel for the game, similar passing ability, similar flair getting to the basket, strength getting to the rim. And they both are very good shooters. Dunn is streaky. Dwayne Wade is streaky. So I'm not making a comparison because that's silly to me. But you can see a little bit of that in Chris Dunn's game. So we'll just leave it at that with Dunn. But I would be okay with the Celtics picking Chris Dunn because I think that it keeps Pandora's box open for them in terms of what they could do. Some of the things that have been bouncing around, you know, we've heard Jimmy Butler a lot. Yesterday we heard Chris Middleton. We've heard Nerlens Noel. We've heard Jahlil Okafor. You know, yesterday we heard Jabari Parker and Gordon Hayward. Mark Stein of ESPN put out a report late last night that kind of, you know, pissed all over Celtics fans' fire a little bit, which kind of said that, you know, the Celtics have been trying to get Jimmy Butler or Gordon Hayward or Jabari Parker or Chris Middleton, and every single trade offer has been rebuffed. Those teams aren't interested in what the Celtics are offering. One thing that I would caution people, you know, you're going to hear a lot about that. You know, whether it's Jimmy Butler or any of those players that I just named, you're going to hear the fact that those teams aren't interested in what the Celtics are offering. Teams don't make trades before the draft. They make trades at the draft or just after the draft. They don't make them before the draft. There's no need to. You know, you have to see how the board is shaking out. You have to get in the room, get in the war room, say, oh, God, the guy we want isn't here. Maybe we do need to make this trade. You know, so GMs and executives, they get trigger finger happy in the 11th hour. So don't get all bent out of shape about some of these reports out there right now. I know it doesn't sound good, but there is still time. The second thing I would say, and this more importantly, you know, than anything else, why would the Celtics have made their best offer? There's no need for them to make their best offer. You know, and it's just like what people were saying, you know, about the Kevin Love trades and the Jimmy Butler trades at the deadline, like, oh, the Celtics were hot after Jimmy Butler, but didn't put Jay Crowder in the deal. Why would they? You know, you put out the offer you want to trade, and the team says to you, no, I'm not doing that. Or, okay, let's talk, let's build off this. You know, for the Celtics, you know, to get Jimmy Butler, I think you have to give up one of Crowder or Bradley, one of the two, not both, one of the two. For this exercise, let's say it's Jay Crowder. Let's say Jay Crowder, Marcus Smart, the number three pick, and next year's Brooklyn pick. That offer would raise the antenna of Chicago. You know, right now, I wouldn't be surprised if they're offering Jay Crowder and the number three pick in that. We'll give you 316 and Jay Crowder. Of course they're not going to do that. Jimmy Butler's a better asset, a better player than any of those, you know, the three pick, the 16 pick, or Jay Crowder. He's a better player than all those guys. You know? So Boston hasn't made their best offer. And Ryan Russillo said today, you know, the Celtics just don't have a lot on their roster. And I don't disagree with that, but I do think that some of those guys have trade value. I mean, let's not get ridiculous. Avery Bradley and Jay Crowder and Marcus Smart and Isaiah Thomas, they definitely have trade value. I mean, you can get something for those guys. You know, but Kelly Olynyk and Jared Sullinger and all those, you know, those guys don't have any value. You know, those are secondary, you know, or third parts, spare parts in a trade. But, you know, we don't have to get crazy with any of that. But the Celtics have made their best offer, and teams know that. You know, teams know that. They know they have a lot on the cover. And I've been saying this for weeks. The Celtics' best asset is next year's Brooklyn pick. Brooklyn should stink next year. Should. You know, I knocked on wood here. Brooklyn should stink next year. Next year's draft is loaded. Loaded. And the Celtics don't want to deal that pick. They don't want to. Nobody should want to deal a pick from a loaded draft. You look at what happened in 2003. The top of that draft was loaded with LeBron and Bosh and Wade and Carmelo Anthony. The top of that draft was loaded, and you had four future Hall of Fame players on top of it. You know, it's hard to trade that pick, but, you know, if the Celtics want to get better right now, maybe you do deal that pick. And people have said that that is going to be a wild card, is whether Boston's willing to deal that pick. You know, like I said, if Jay Crowder, Marcus Smart, the third pick, and next year's Brooklyn pick, that is a deal starter. That is a conversation starter for Chicago. Chicago's not going to say no to that. They're going to talk with you about that. You know, I'm not dealing that for Gordon Hayward or Chris Middleton. You know, if there's no deal to be made there's no deal to be made. But that is a deal starter. You know, that's a lot to give up. You're giving up four very, very good assets. And the cupboard is becoming dry on that one, you know. And maybe it makes more positional sense, you know, having some people, you know, getting all over me here saying, well, you know, why do you have Butler and Bradley? It doesn't make any sense. So maybe it's Bradley as the crowd. I mean, what is the difference, you know? Brad Stevens will make it work, and I'm not really overly concerned about that. You know, and maybe you keep Bradley because you're going to flip Bradley for Kevin Love. That's another thing. Brian Windhorst yesterday said that Cleveland liked Avery Bradley, and the Boston trade does make sense. You know, so maybe it's Avery Bradley and the 23rd pick for Kevin Love. And now you have Thomas, you have Butler, and you have Love. You know, or maybe it's Isaiah Thomas going to Chicago. You know, I don't know. I don't know who these teams want. I don't know what these teams are asking for. You know, I don't know what the Celtics are willing to give up. You know, I've said this. I do have a fear that Danny Ainge isn't going to make a deal unless he feels like he wins it. And the other thing I've said is the Celtics, on paper, when and if they make this blockbuster deal that they've been talking about, it's going to look like, on paper, like they lost the trade. You know, it's not going to look like, oh, Danny Ainge fleeced on this time. No, it's going to look like they lost the trade. You know, on paper, it'll say Chicago receives Jay Crowder, Marcus Smart, third pick, next year's Brooklyn pick. And you're going to go, oh, my God, wow, that's a lot to give up. And it's just going to say Boston receives Jimmy Butler. That's it. It's going to be a 1-for-4 or a 1-for-5 or a 1-for-6 swap. You're going to give up a lot. It's going to look like you lost the trade on paper. But if those are the trades you want to make, those are the trades you have to make. Do you know how many people in the city of Boston, when the Celtics traded for Kevin Garnett, do you have any idea how many people said, oh, my goodness, how could we give up Al Jefferson, Gerald Green, and Ryan Gomes in the same trade? Do you know how many people said that? Al Jefferson has been a fringe all-star at best. Gerald Green is a journeyman rotation player, and Ryan Gomes is playing in China. So it baffles me. It baffles me. You know, you're going to lose a trade on paper. And if I'm the Boston Celtics and I want to contend and I want to get there quicker, I'm taking Jimmy Butler. I'm not taking Marcus Smart and Jay Crowder. You know, but again, I don't know what these teams are looking for. I don't know what the Celtics are offering. I don't know how these teams value what the Celtics have. I do think there is value around the league, but we'll see. There's a lot that's going to happen over the next 38 hours. So just keep your phones on, I guess is what I would say. Keep Twitter ready to scroll up and refresh your Twitter feeds. The other thing, too, I want to talk about is the Philadelphia 76ers aspect. Tim Welsh, CSNN, has been talking about how stuff between the Sixers and Celtics have been intensifying. Tim Welsh used to coach at Providence, so he still has a lot of close contacts within the school. Who went to Providence? Chris Dunn. Who's the guy that they really want? Chris Dunn. So it could be Chris Dunn's camp or some confidant from Providence saying, yeah, man, Philly's really hot after Dunn. They're talking to Boston. It's getting pretty intense, you know. That wouldn't surprise me at all. I think Philly and Boston have made sense. And the way that I see those talks, you know, yesterday it said that Philly's been trying to throw Jahlil Okafor at the Celtics, which is really the first time that we've seen that it wasn't Danny Ainge wants Okafor, it was that Philly is trying to convince Danny Ainge to take Okafor for the third pick, and the Celtics are saying no. That doesn't mean Ainge doesn't like Okafor, doesn't want Okafor, but it just means that he's not knocking on Philly's door saying, hey, let's make this deal. It's the other way around, actually. Philly wants that third pick. Boston isn't really sure they want to make that deal. Also said the Celtics have been holding out for Nerlens Noel. I think that would be a good fit for them, for the Celtics. At least he can guard multiple spots. He's athletic enough to guard the perimeter on switches. He's a very young rim protector. His offense does need to improve, but it's not, you know, not deathly terrible, I would say, for Nerlens Noel. He's a local kid. The only negative with Noel is he's going to be a restricted free agent next offseason. So you're going to have to pay this kid. And Okafor has 2 or 3 years left on his deal, so that would be a decision for the Celtics. And whether they feel like they can make Okafor into something. You know, I actually said this to one guy that I work with. You know, he said, if it's Okafor for the number 3 pick, I'm making that deal. And I said, yeah, you know, I would too. And, you know, if Jared Sullinger can produce in Boston, I would assume Jahlil Okafor can produce in Boston. But what is Okafor? You know, he put up numbers on a bad team. What is he on a good playoff team? You know, is he still 17-7, or is he climbing closer to 20-10? Or is he dropping back to 13-5? You know, I don't know. I don't know. You know, is he DeMarcus Cousins light if he loses a little weight and works on his quickness, or is he just a better Jared Sullinger? You know, those are all things that the Celtics need to figure out, how to use him, how they would utilize him, and if they think they could get the most out of a kid like that, who is immensely talented. But the way I see that deal happening is the Celtics are going to try every avenue to get Butler or Hayward or Middleton, Parker, or, you know, whoever, Kevin Love, whoever's out there, they're going to try and get before they get on the clock on Thursday. But if they can't, I think they know they have a deal in their back pocket, and that's why I think that the reports are saying that, you know, Boston has said no to this point. Because they know they have it in the back pocket. You know, and if they want Okafor, they can have Okafor. If they want Noel, they can probably get Noel. So I think that they know they have a deal in the back pocket, because if Philly wants Dunn, there's really only one team they can trade with. It's Celtics. I mean, if they want Dunn, they're not going to trade with Phoenix to get Dunn. Boston will just take Dunn, and now the deal is Dev's done. You know, Philly knows they need to wait out the Celtics. And if the Celtics don't get what they want from another team, I think they go back to Philadelphia. So that's another thing to keep an eye on. And again, if the Celtics just make the pick, anyone but Dragan Bender or Marquese Chriss, anyone, literally anyone, I will take a second round flyer on a European or a guy like Joel Bolombe from Weber State. You can take him at 3. Just please, please God, don't take Dragan Bender or Marquese Chriss at number 3. They have 4 letters attached to their name each. It's B-U-S-T. Bust, bust, bust. Both of those guys, bust. Don't touch them. Don't touch them. If I'm the Celtics, those are the only things I'm asking that they don't do on draft night. Just please do not touch those 2 players. Again, draft night, tomorrow night, is finally here. We're almost there. Draft night, tomorrow night, June 23rd, 7 p.m., ESPN. Check it out. It's going to be great. Keep the Twitter feed live. A lot is going to happen. What I would say is don't get too disappointed too early. You know, if they make the pick, don't fire your phone against the wall. There's still time to make a deal. You got to see how it's all going to pan out. Don't get too disappointed early, and just keep an open mind. Danny Ainge knows what he's doing. He's going to try. We just need to hope for the best as fit. So that's all you need to do. Again, tomorrow night, 7 p.m. ESPN. On CSNNE, they will have draft coverage from 6 until midnight, 6 hours of draft coverage with local Celtics voices. So definitely give that a look, too, if you don't want to listen to the insufferable voices on ESPN, Jay Billis and Chad Ford, most notably. So if you don't want to listen to them, check out CSNNE from 6 to 12 tomorrow. A lot of draft coverage. Again, check us out, hcrundown.com. We will have the draft covered. With our mock draft leading into the draft tomorrow night, we'll have a post-draft recap. We'll have everything you need for the NBA draft. It'll be on HD Rundown. Check us out. Can't wait to recap the draft with you guys. We will talk to you guys soon. Good luck, Celtics. Good luck, Hoopheads. Enjoy the draft tomorrow night. Goodbye.